An audit of the Ravalli County Treasurer's Office finds disarray but no evidence of fraud. Good evening, I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid, and that's our top story on tonight's Montana Evening Edition. The Public Service Commission grants Northwestern Energy's request to increase electricity rates.
And reporter Katrin Fry tells us about the effort to address homelessness in the Flathead Valley. An audit of the Ravalli County's Treasurer's Office found the office was in disarray and the interim treasurer was not fulfilling her duties, but it found no evidence of fraud. County Attorney Bill Fulbright today released the results of an audit completed by the Anderson Vermilion Company. County commissioners are scheduled to meet Friday to discuss the report and consider possible action on the status of Treasurer Valerie Stamey, who has been on paid leave since January. The audit recommended several internal controls be established and that policy and procedures be written for the treasurer's office. Stamey was appointed in September and placed on leave in January after failing to make deposits, disburse money, and make required monthly reports. She then accused current and former treasurer's office employees of the wrongdoing. None has been found outside into outside investigations.
The Missoula City Council passed a $50 million budget this week for fiscal year 2015, but city officials still must decide how to fund items that were to be paid for with a proposed citywide taxing district. Protests are still being tabulated, but enough have been validated to deny that district, which would have generated $350,000. The Public Safety and Justice District would have funded a variety of things, ranging from more police storage space and firefighting equipment to a new sexual victims unit as mandated by agreement with the Federal Department of Justice. Missoula City Chief Administrative Officer Bruce Bender can only speculate why enough Missoulians opted to protest creation of the district.
What we heard from people were that they were concerned that how we were using the park and road districts, that we were increasing them too fast. There was a concern that we didn't have any cap on these, even though we argued that a cap is the district itself. There's only certain eligible items in it. When we created the road and park districts, we had received like about a 9% protest even on that. But this law that says if you get at least 10, then you have to go to a vote, I think that opportunity may have driven more people to protest saying, well, we want to vote on this.
Meanwhile, Bender says the $50 million budget that was approved by the city council represents a 2.8% property tax increase. Revenues from various user and permit fees increased by 3%.
Primary need that the city has is to meet our obligations of our negotiated union contracts, primarily with police and fire and streets. That was almost $1 million requirement right there. That's the most significant part. We also have some obligations with our partners at the in the county or the health department and grants and stuff that we also have contractual obligations there. So primarily that's what drove it. There were some other additional things. The mayor wanted to assist the Big Sky Trust Fund for $40,000. We set aside a mountain line fare subsidy of $50,000 with the goal of other partners getting to where we have free fare for mountain line. We added that dollar amount in.
City officials haven't yet determined whether to try to raise those special district funds again with a citywide referendum later this year, or maybe even next. If successful, that revenue would be implemented in the fiscal year 2016 budget.
Montana utility regulators have granted a Northwestern Energy request to boost electricity rate by 6.44% so the company can recover $32 million in underestimated supply costs. The increase takes effect on July 1st. Public Service Commission members said in approving the hike today, the increase is temporary for now, and whether it stays will be contingent on further study. The money can be returned if commissioners find they weren't justified. Northwest Energy has said its rates didn't reflect the actual market cost for the past 12 months. Over that period, one of the Colstrip power plant's units was offline for about 6 months. The company has not said how much of the $32 million it is trying to recover is due to that outage. PSC staff estimated the cost at $11 million.
A member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes who says he was wrongly arrested by Ronan police has filed a lawsuit alleging the city violated his constitutional rights by hiring at least one unqualified officer. Anthony Cheney filed the lawsuit earlier this month against the city, its police department, mayor, former police chief Daniel Wadsworth, and his son Trevor Wadsworth. Cheney alleges he was handcuffed by Trevor Wadsworth and told he was under arrest on July 14, 2013, despite the fact that Wadsworth had not undergone the required training to be a police officer. No charges were ever filed against Chaney, who said he was struggling with his brother as he suffered an episode with post-traumatic stress disorder. Chaney seeks to have the lawsuit declared a class action on behalf of anyone else who might have been arrested or subject to search or seizure by Trevor Wadsworth or any other ineligible police officers. Trevor Wadsworth left the academy in 2010 after he was unable to prove he had been hired by the Ronan Police Department. The council said the mayor still approved Trevor Wadsworth hiring in May 2011, knowing he hadn't finished his training. Officers are required to complete the training within a year of being hired. The lawsuit asks for a jury trial and seeks compensatory and punitive damages and attorney fees. The mayor did not immediately return a phone call from the Associated Press today.
Adventurous Montana travelers heading to Glacier National Park may want to keep their cold weather gear handy as the late spring storm has triggered a winter storm watch for the park and the surrounding area. The National Weather Service says intense snowfall in the West Glacier area will produce 2 to 6 inches of snow between 6,000 and 7,000 feet, with 10 to 20 inches possible in high alpine regions. Meanwhile, in the East Glacier area, the Weather Service has issued flood watches with possible mudslides and debris flows in the mountains of Glacier National Park. 2 to 3 inches or more of rain could fall on the Continental Divide in the next 24 hours. Park spokesman Jennifer Lutman says all this precipitation has further delayed the park road crew's ability to clear out the Big Drift, a massive snowdrift that accumulates in Logan Pass every year. At more than 6,500 feet, the pass is the highest point in the park travelers can drive their vehicles.
The road crew was up there this morning, and they reported snow coming down the Logan Pass area. So they halted operations near the Big Drift area for safety and visibility reasons. But they are continuing to clear debris and install guardrails in the lower sections of the Going to Sun Road.
The popular and scenic Highway 49, also known as Looking Glass Road, will remain closed. Lutman says storms like this affect road crews the most. All employees in the park take extra safety precautions throughout the week and maintain clear communication and safety awareness throughout the park. The storm also puts a bit of damper on the beginning of the summer tourist season in the park.
We all want to see good weather in the park, you know, when we come to recreate, but it's June in Montana and the Continental Divide, and we often see, you know, wet weather and storms. So it's not completely unheard of, but we're hoping it'll pass soon.
We'll have more weather information later in the broadcast.
Police in Missoula are investigating after a 19-year-old man suffered severe burns in a weekend explosion. Police spokesman Travis Welsh tells the Missoulian the man was standing near a bonfire Sunday evening when someone else threw an accelerant on it and caused an explosion. Welsh says the victim suffered burns on his head, face, chest, and hands and was flown to a Utah burn hospital for treatment. Welsh says University of Montana campus police asked Missoula police to take over the investigation yesterday to determine if criminal charges are warranted.
The Lewis and Clark County Sheriff's Office is more prepared to respond to emergencies on three major Helena area lakes this summer. The Independent Record reports the agency created a water emergency team and purchased 2 used jet skis for deputies to use to patrol Canton Ferry, Hauser, and Holter reservoirs. Deputy Uriah Wood, a leader of the county sheriff's and rescue team, suggested creating a lake patrol and rescue team. He said the department didn't have any patrol capabilities on the water and would have to borrow a boat to respond to emergencies. 4 deputies, a captain, and the sheriff have trained on the operating of the jet skis and performing first aid in the water. They also had to pass a rigorous swimming test. Patrols begin this weekend and are continuing each weekend through August.
A 5-year plan to end homelessness in the Flathead Valley kicked off last week as the community came together during its annual Project Homeless Connect event. The plan brings together multiple agencies that work with people facing homelessness. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on how this new collaboration aims to reach its ambitious goal.
The Montana Highlanders opened up the ceremony announcing the creation of HIRE, Homelessness, Interagency, Resource, and Education, is an organization that brings together the myriad groups and agencies that work with or come into contact with people facing homelessness. This includes local school districts, the Women's Shelter, the Health Department, United Way, the Veterans Administration, Job Service, local homeless shelter, and others. Executive Director of the homeless shelter, the Samaritan House, Chris Krager, admits the goal of ending homelessness is ambitious.
We ought to be trying. We ought to be helping people. And so that's really the sort of spirit behind the plan and the committee. We're working together to try to offer the hospitality to people and offer things that are needed to people that need them.
Some of these things that are needed include a hot meal, clothes, health checkups, and housing. Each year, different organizations from across the Flathead come together in a two-day event offering those things in the annual Project Homeless Connect. Agency Development Director Allison Metzler with Community Action Partnership is also working with HIRE. She also worked on Project Homeless Connect, which just wrapped up its fifth year.
And it's really grown and taken on a bit of a life of its own. There are people who in January start calling saying, gosh, I was involved last year. When are you all meeting? It's developed great community support over the years, and we've had just a terrific outpouring of volunteers and of donations.
Metzler says the interagency collaboration of Project Homeless Connect is what they're taking year-round with the creation of HIRE.
And the Flathead HIRE is a way for us to continue to work together, to continue to brainstorm new ideas and identify ways that we can improve our system of care here in Flathead County.
HIRE has outlined five goals, one of which is continuing the annual Project Homeless Connect event. Another is increasing the number of beds available in the Flathead. With this goal, Krager says their occupancy does not change with the seasons. The Samaritan House and Transitional Housing has 65 beds and serves 1,300 to 1,400 people each year.
When you compare the number of immediately available beds to the number of people surveyed as homeless in the annual housing survey, Samaritan House and Community Action Partnership are only probably 12 to 14% of what is needed to properly address homelessness. So we need a bigger boat.
A particular issue in the Flathead is finding space for families with kids or for teens. A third goal of HIRE is to create more options to prevent homelessness, which Metzler says is a challenge because most affordable housing and similar programs prioritize for people who have already lost their homes, not those on the verge. A fourth goal is clear, open communication between all these different agencies that interface with people who have lost or are losing their homes.
The idea is to create a no wrong door policy where no matter where someone goes, they can receive the appropriate referral, they can know what's available to them, where they don't get the runaround. So instead of getting a you're not the right fit here response, people will get the referral, the phone call, the ride to where they need to go.
The final goal is increasing public awareness and community involvement to remedy homelessness in the area. Metzler says the problem can stay hidden in rural areas like the Flathead.
They're in the woods. They're just outside of town. They're in abandoned buildings where everybody does not see them, doesn't recognize that they're there. And that leads to the misconception that there's not a homeless problem.
Metzler says this public awareness is important because there is no single solution to the problem of homelessness. She says it'll take more than just the social service agencies working together to fix the problem, but also landlords, real estate agents, lenders, banks, and other private businesses. Catherine Fryett reporting from the Flathead.
In tonight's forecast, west of the Divide, a winter weather advisory is in effect until noon on Wednesday above 5,000 feet for the West Glacier region. Tonight, expect rain likely and lows in the 30s to lower 40s. Wednesday, look for rain showers and highs in the upper in the 50s to lower 60s. In central Montana, winter warning is in effect until 6 a.m. on Wednesday for elevations above 6,500 feet for the Rocky Mountain front. Tonight, expect isolated thunderstorms in the evening, rain showers likely through the night, lows 40 to 45, and on Wednesday, look for cloudy skies and rain showers through the day with isolated thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs 50 to 60. In southwest Montana, tonight, look for snow showers and isolated thunderstorms in the evening, rain showers likely through the night, and lows 30 to 40. Wednesday, expect cloudy skies with rain showers and snow showers through the day, isolated thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs 50 to 60. And now for the editorial comments of Dan Gallagher.
This is Dan Gallagher with Veterans Viewpoint. Well, there's a lot to talk about in the veterans world these days. For example, on May 30th, VA's Secretary Shinseki resigned that position. But I find neither pleasure nor optimism in that action, mostly because of the way it came to be. Some of the self-proclaimed veterans leadership foolishly pushed for Shinseki's firing, eventually pulling the rug out from under his ability to straighten out a mess that was not at all of his own making. And joining them in a truly unholy, unhealthy, cacophonous alliance were opportunistic politicians and political candidates who suddenly discovered how much they loved veterans and, pardon my cynicism, how good it would be to embarrass the president and anything resembling a national health care system. So Shinseki is gone, replaced by Sloan Gibson, who seems highly competent and genuine in his restoration efforts. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not Shinseki's apologist, but he was not the problem. The problem goes much deeper and further back in history than this one man. President Obama said it well in his speech announcing Shinseki's resignation when he said that what most needed changing was the culture of the VA bureaucracy, a culture that rewards those administrators and administrative functionaries who find ways to deny an increased number of veterans' claims while simultaneously punishing VA whistleblowers or threatening their employment security. This is the same culture that tolerates a claims adjudication system that, in some states, including Montana, approves less than one-fourth of all veterans' claims. And where were, are, or will be the majority of those who seem so sure that Shinseki was the problem or who have been oblivious for all but the most recent past of the unbroken line of VA outrages against veteran claimants? They were and will be again found sitting on their hands or voting against adequate and wisely allocated funding of important veterans care issues, even as they vote for new wars that will create new groups of veterans needing care. And by the way, let me reemphasize an important point. As many veterans have stated and written lately, the medical personnel at the VA are overwhelmingly highly competent and dedicated professionals. How ironic it is to see the issues and potential resolutions that are spoken of by some of us veteran advocates for years now being offered as the brainchildren of the veteran world's newest would-be champions. How loudly these pretenders shout. Now, before I go, I want to comment on one more contemporary war-related topic. U.S. Army Sergeant Bowie Bergdahl was released by the Taliban in Afghanistan in exchange for five terrorists being held by the U.S. at Guantanamo. Now, much criticism of the swap has ensued, fueled in part by Bergdahl's actions just prior to being captured. Frankly, all sides in the discussion have legitimate points to make. Critics are right in pointing out that bargaining with terrorists is diplomatic folly. It merely empowers them to make greater demands and take stronger actions. But defenders of this swap are correct in saying that trading insignificant thugs for an American soldier's life is more important than following supposed rules in a war that has no rules and with no likely fulfilling outcome. And while I tire of hearing the values of soldierly martyrdom from the likes of Marcus Luttrell, Ollie North, and their ilk, still, I recognize that there are soldierly principles that must be followed, even though principles and logic may be otherwise lacking in war. I don't know enough about Bergdahl's actions or how many lives he cost or threatened with an act that some are calling foolish or even cowardly or treasonous. And I don't know if the loss of five such prisoner detainees from our holding pen at Gitmo is even an issue worthy of comment. The key in this issue is, it seems to me, Bergdahl himself. Whether his original actions were so wrong that his capture was something akin to his just desert. Harsh though this sounds, was he worth the trade? Now, a full-scale investigation into the whole Bergdahl incident has begun, with the Army appointing a two-star general to head the task. Good. May it be thorough and fair. You know, it's easy to find fault and have suspicions in a matter such as this, but until all the facts are in, I choose to hold my criticism and scorn of this soldier from our neighbor state. Instead, if I were going to be contemptuous of anything, I'd focus my contempt on those policymakers who callously send American youth to fight wars of questionable value and then allow them to flounder in our government's Veterans Assistance Agency that does not hold itself to the same standards we demand of our soldiers. Now, that's something worthy of contempt. This is Dan Gallagher with Veterans Viewpoint.
Dan Gallagher is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition.
The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheib.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening. And please join Edwin O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.